We're coming up to the Feast of Tabernacles, and it's probably on our minds as we're preparing to go wherever you're going, Rapid City, Italy, down to Orange Beach, wherever. It's a very exciting time, and it also can be a very sobering time for some people because of what it says in Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 23, where it says, "You shall eat before the Lord your God in the place he chooses to make his name abide, the tithe." And we call this tithe the second tithe, traditionally in the church, referred to our festival tithe. And it's this time of year that sometimes people get a little nervous because, well, maybe it could be a very legitimate reason they've been underemployed or unemployed and unable to save the second tithe that they really need to attend the Feast of Tabernacles. And that's why we do offer assistance for those who have saved their second tithe diligently, but just don't have enough to make it work. But there are others who have found it difficult to step out in faith and really save that aside, to really put it aside. Some people have over the years considered their second tithe fund to be kind of a savings that they can use for emergencies if something comes up. And so oftentimes a little is borrowed out of that and never gets back in. And so it's a stressful time approaching the feast as they wonder, how am I going to pay to go to Rapid City? How am I going to afford this? Am I going to have to go in debt, borrow, put it on a credit card? And I'm occasionally approached by people that really are kind of stressed about that, and they're having difficulty just keeping that second tithe to be dedicated to second tithe. And yet we all know that's what God asks us to do. It's what God commands us to do so that we don't have to go to the feast and be concerned. We can actually enjoy the feast without being concerned about how we're going to pay for it. And if you go back to James chapter 4, let's kind of shift gears a little bit. There is the concern about sometimes how we're going to pay for the feast, especially if things have not been good for us or if we haven't been saving our tithe. There is also another verse here I want to focus on as we introduce the subject today. James chapter 4 and beginning in verse 1. James 4 verse 1 says, "Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. And you ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasure." So there are problems with motives sometimes when they ask, but oftentimes they don't ask. But there are these desires, and it causes wars and fights. You know, looking back through history and some of the, as I've mentioned before, the podcast I've been listening to about the history of Rome, that oftentimes people have gained what they want by taking it. You just, if you see something you want, if you're more powerful, you just take it. In early Roman days, as the building toward the empire, oftentimes the soldiers, they weren't paid by the state. Their pay came from whatever plunder they got from whoever they took over. And sometimes their generals would allow them to plunder a little more than normal and take from these innocent people. Just take it from them. That's how they gained their wealth as a soldier. And I wonder, when it comes to economics, when we're in the kingdom of God, in the millennium, I wonder how much of what we experience today has really been experienced by so many people. If you think about the fact, how do you gain more money? You take it from others. Many people have been trained that way. Now, we live in a society where we have freedom. We have the ability to use our money, to invest our money, maybe invest it in ourselves, in our own business. We have a society that is based on the rule of law, which means if there are certain laws in place and they're going to be enforced, there's a certain predictability about what would happen if we invest money in some way or if we do such and such. We don't have to worry about someone coming along and just randomly outlawing our business because they want to make more money than we do or they want a monopoly on things. We don't have a perfect society And certainly our capitalistic system does promote or allows for a great deal of greed. And even our laws, there are people who don't care about the laws, that try every way to get around them, perhaps even legitimately. But the spirit of the way they think is to get around the laws. And certainly things are not perfect, but boy, oh boy, you look at the ability we have in our society to go out and work and to make money, to build wealth. I mean, there has been no society on earth, I don't believe, that has ever been quite the way this one is. You don't have to be an important person. The guy down the street, the plumber, may be a millionaire. Not necessarily because he makes tons of money, but because he saves it, invests it well, invests it right. You can be successful in this country almost no matter who you are. It's just a matter of applying certain principles that work. And many people have found those principles. I have found some secret principles of how to beat Wall Street, and I would like to talk about that in the sermon today. No, I'm just kidding. I know nothing about that, but I would like to talk about some of the biblical principles that govern personal and family finance. As we're approaching the feast, as we're considering budgeting and how much second tithe we have, again, people sometimes have to look at their financial situation and ask, why don't I have what I need to have this time of year? We are going to be teaching people in the millennium, many of whom grew up and lived in a whole different society. We're going to be teaching them these principles. Many of them never had the opportunity to practice some of them because they were just ignorant of it, or they didn't have the kind of society that would allow for it. And we live in a society that does. In many ways, the economic environment we live in is very different than almost anybody that's ever lived. Very few have lived to the standard of living that most of us do. Historically, I should say. And so in one sense, you may say we're very disconnected from the people we will be teaching. But in another sense, the principles we are free and allowed to practice in this nation and what we do on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, those are the same principles we're going to be teaching. And we live in a free society to be able to practice and benefit from them. They will live in a society in the millennium where they will be able to benefit from the fact they're working harder. Some people never lived in an area where working harder provided any extra benefit. They just expected a certain stipend from the government. Some of them, no matter how hard they worked, the landowner was going to take as much as they wanted anyway. Some people never had the opportunity to consider how to invest anything in themselves or in another business or something like that, or even in land. They weren't allowed to own land. People lived in a very different world, and I think the benefit we have is we have the opportunity of living and practicing the principles we're going to be able to teach in the millennium. Even though there may be a disconnect in terms of prosperity, the principles are the same, and they will be able to prosper by practicing these principles. So let's go through them today. I have 7 principles I'll go through very quickly so we get through this without going overtime. The first principle is one you might just simply guess right away. It's tithing. Most people in the world never knew about tithing. They never got to experience the blessings of tithing. But tithing teaches us some important things about wealth, about money, about property. The first thing it teaches us we find in Psalm 24, verse 1. Psalm chapter 24 and verse 1. And this is an underlying principle that should always be in the forefront of our mind when we're dealing with anything. Our property, our home, money. We have to keep in mind Psalm 24, verse 1. The earth is the Lord's, and all its fullness, the world and those who dwell within. Everything belongs to God. We belong to God. He created us. Everything we own belongs to God. Now, this is a kind of anti-American way of looking at things in one sense, because we're very concerned about what we own, protecting what we own. It's mine. And that's good. I mean, it's better than it belonging to the king, some worldly king. It's better than it belonging to the property owner who he's the only one that has the status to own any land. You know, it's good that we can own private property. It's a blessing. But ultimately, it belongs to God. He created every bit of it. And the more we remember that, the more that fundamental concept affects us in our way of thinking. You don't have to turn there, but back in Haggai 2, verse 8, there's a similar principle. Haggai 2, verse 8, the silver is mine, the gold is mine. I have a little square of silver in my desk. I sometimes will look up how much it might be worth, not very much, but I sometimes just get curious. But that little bar of silver, believe me, it's small. Don't go looking through my desk. It's worth a little bit, but God owns it. It's not mine. Ultimately, it belongs to God. I will die and be buried. I don't get to take it with me. And if I did, someone might try to dig it up later on. Digging for treasure. But it's not mine. It belongs to God. And that's one of the principles we learn from tithing. Another thing that we learn is we obey God with regard to how we use our money. Since it belongs to God, we are concerned about obeying God in terms of how we use it. Excuse me. Another thing that I'm going to have to get some water here. Someone should tell me never to eat a peanut before I speak. That was a long time ago, too. Another thing that tithing teaches us or allows us the opportunity to do is put God first. To put God first. When we receive our paycheck, we can, first thing, write out our check to God. Write out our first tithe. First thing, put aside our second tithe. And if it's our third tithe year, we can set that aside too. But we deal with our tithes first. And that is a way we show God that we're putting Him first. We may not give God all our money, or not even more than 50%, but we show God we're putting Him first by paying that first. And it doesn't matter what we owe at the end. We don't borrow from that. That's how we show God that this is yours. This is what you have told me to do, and this is what I'm going to worship you by doing that. So tithing is an important principle. And God blesses us. He tells us to test Him. Test Him to see if He doesn't bless us when we tithe faithfully. Let's move on to point number two. It's related, but it has to do with putting ourselves in a position to be blessed by God. And it's simply this. Point number two is obedience so that we can be blessed by God. Obedience. So we obey God by tithing, but we obey God in general, all of His laws. And that obedience allows us to have blessings. Matthew chapter 6, you're familiar with Matthew chapter 6, where it talks about not worrying about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink. And there have been times throughout history where many people have had to worry about these things. We typically don't. We can go right to the back of the hall today, and there's something to drink. There'll be something to eat, put out after services. And we have plenty at home, probably. Most people throw out a significant portion of their food because it just goes bad in America. We have plenty, but there have been many over the years who have had to worry. You know, we tend to worry about whether it's what kind of steak it is, not whether we have steak. We tend to worry about the brand of clothing, the quality of clothing, rather than whether we will have it at all. But there have been times where, and we will be teaching people who had a great deal to worry about providing their needs every day. And it was a big deal. He goes on to talk about which of you can, by worrying, add one cubit to his stature, verse 27. And he talks about how the lilies, they neither toil nor spin, yet not even Solomon was arrayed like one of these. God has the ability to provide. And he goes on to say, in the end, verse 33, seek you first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And he says, if we do that, all these necessities, all these things will be added to you. In other words, God will provide. God owns it. God knows our needs. And worrying doesn't help. But if we focus our attention on the kingdom of God and His righteousness, then God says, He promises that He will provide for us our needs. Now, He may not provide for us all our wants, but certainly our needs will be there. Go back to 1 John 3. 1 John chapter 3. God does bless us when we're obedient to Him. He blesses us in various ways. And in John chapter 3 and verse 22, we are told that whatever we ask, we receive of him. Now, of course, that's within reason. He doesn't cause a Ferrari to show up in our driveway. He knows what we don't need, and we probably don't need that. But he says, whatever we ask, we receive of him. Notice it says, because we keep his commandments. Because we keep his commandments and do those things that are pleasing in his sight. God wants to bless those who obey him and do those things which are pleasing in his sight. There's one psalm in Psalm 37 where it says, I have been young and I have been old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor the descendants, nor his descendants begging for bread. You know, that's Psalm 37, verse 25. I didn't look to see whether it was a psalm of David or not. I think it is. But I've been old, now I've been young, I'm now old, I've not seen the righteous forsaken. And we have these promises. Now, there are different times that we go through in our lives, even in a nation, where there's prosperity at times and there's a lack of prosperity at other times. And even our nation has been through historically times where people have had to struggle. We had the Great Depression, and people struggled mightily. And we've had times, like in recent years, where things have been going pretty well. Right now, we're all aware of the economic news. You know, certain things are looking up. But I just read a headline the other day where they're worried that things may head down because there's just not enough people to drive the trucks to get the merchandise and the things delivered that needs to be delivered in various places. We almost have a crisis of having enough workers. Finding people willing to work and able to do the job. And so we have our ups and downs. And we know there's a time coming in the future in which there will be, this nation will lose its blessings. And it will be difficult for everyone. We won't have the opportunity to prosper as we do now. But we do know that in those times, God is there to provide. And but we have the ability to take advantage of times when they're prosperous. And I believe very much that when we practice these biblical principles, that we can be prosperous in prosperous times. And when things change around, we just remember, when Israel needed water, God sent it from a rock. When they needed food, manna showed up. When Elijah, during the drought that he experienced, God sent ravens to feed him. And then he was able to go to a poor woman's house, and she gave him some of her last bread, and God provided that she never ran out after that. God is a provider when we are in those down times, and we need our sustenance, and we can't get it ourselves. So we experience ups and downs, but certainly there's the opportunity to be blessed by God when we obey him. Let's go to point number three. Point number three involves stewardship. We are to be good stewards. Remember, God owns everything. So what we have, we are managing simply for him. We tend to think of it just as our own. But if we go and decide we're going to blow a bunch of money gambling, we are gambling God's money. In essence, because he owns it all. And see, it kind of changes the way we perceive what we have if we think, this is God's. I need to care for it. I need to manage it well. Because God does judge us in part on our stewardship. How well we take care of the things that we have that God has given us to use. Stewardship involves accountability. I believe that tithing and the concept of stewardship is one of the reasons that the Jewish community over the years have been able to do so well. You know, we have these conspiracy theorists out there that the Jews run everything. They run Hollywood, they run all the banks, and because oftentimes, and this is not a new thing, they have been subject to persecution over the millennia because oftentimes they did well financially. So they must be doing something to cheat everybody else. But why did they do so well? Well, tithing forced them to account for their money. I mean, they had to keep track of what was their income, what was their expense, what is my increase, because that's 10% of that is God's. So it forced accountability. And when people are able to see what's happening with their finances, they understand better what to do to fix problems. It's just a simple matter of arithmetic, really. When you can see it, you can fix it. And they were forced to be able to see it because they had to account for it. And that's partly stewardship as well. Stewardship is about accountability, knowing what's going on with our finances. We call this budgeting in our today's world. I'm not going to get in and talk all about budgeting, but I do want to talk about, again, the principle of stewardship, knowing what's going on with our money. I will oftentimes counsel young couples as they're getting married to, one of the things they have to do is put together a budget. What is going to look like once you get married? And many times, they've never really thought through the details of what every cost might be. And when they see that, if they haven't looked at it, when they see it, it's kind of surprising. And we're going to need this much money. I didn't realize expenses would be that much. And it helps them approach marriage from a more realistic point of view. Oftentimes, we spend money not knowing where it's going. How many times have I been told, wow, I didn't know how much Starbucks was making from me until I actually looked at my credit card bill. And they're making a lot. Being accountable is very helpful. Proverbs 24, verse 3 says, through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. We build our house, in particular our financial house, through a certain amount of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And I encourage our young people to take advantage of some of the well-written books about financial management. Take advantage of some of the books that explain how the banking system and how the, and I don't mean the conspiracy things, but I'm just talking about how finance works. How borrowing money really works, the real cost of things. Understanding when is it wise to borrow? Because there are times it's wise to borrow. But when is it not? How do you know the difference? All debt is not bad, but what debt is bad? And our young people, really, it really helps. I know some of you I've spoken to have already, you're interested in that kind of thing and do that. I think it's very helpful to understand how the world works when it comes to money. You can't do that in a sermon, but the information's out there, and some very good information is out there. But it's through wisdom that a house is built, and understanding that it is established. And by knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. We have to have knowledge. We have to have understanding of the system and the way things work if we are to be a good steward. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But let's go to Luke chapter 12. Luke 12, verse 42. Luke chapter 12 and verse 42 through 44. And the Lord said, who then is that faithful and wise steward whom his master will make ruler over his household to give them their portion of food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. And it goes on to say, truly I say to you that he will make him ruler over all that he has. Now, the implication of that is there's an element of our judgment and our reward in the kingdom of God that is based on how well we deal with the things we have now. That God ultimately owns, but how well do we manage those things? How good of a steward are we? God sees that. And it is an element of our character. It's an element of our character as to how well we manage and are good stewards of the things that we have. Let's go back to Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21 and verse 20. There's a principle we find here that is a subcategory of this stewardship, and it is the concept of having a savings. I saw in the news recently, it wasn't specifically with regard to savings, but it specifically had to do with, I think it was, if you had a $1,000 unexpected expense, could you pay it? And it's amazing how many people couldn't. They couldn't do it because they don't have any savings, and they wouldn't be able to deal with this. How would they deal with it? Well, you borrow it. Borrow the money from a friend, put it on a credit card. They didn't have the money for it. Proverbs 21, verse 20 says, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devour all he has. Notice there's an element of the idea of a wise man has the self-control and discretion not to just devour everything, but to save, to have something in store. A wise man has stores of choice food and oil. It's wise to have a store. Now, maybe our store may not be of choice oils and things like that, but certainly the point for us is to have a savings, to have something you can turn to if you need to. Proverbs 22, just a page over, verse 3, Proverbs 22 and verse 3, a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. Now, this verse applies to finances as well. A prudent person understands what's coming. And then oftentimes, again, we'll bring up the subject of a newly married couple, a young couple, looking at perhaps having a couple children. And oftentimes, they don't realize how much kids cost. I mean, kids cost. I'm not complaining about my kids, but there's a cost. And we all know that as parents. And sometimes it can be quite surprising what diapers cost. All these other things that come along, health care, and all these things. And so it's prudent to look ahead and say, okay, if we're planning to have children in 2 years, what kind of income do we need to have? But the simple just go on, and suddenly the kids show up, and what do? You know, it's stressful. It's difficult. So it's planning ahead. And oftentimes this involves a savings because we know things are coming. We know times are coming and difficulties, and we will need these things. What about Proverbs 13, verse 22? Now, I'm going to read this, and I don't want anybody to feel bad. I mean, most people today don't do this, but it is a way of thinking that we ought to consider. And Proverbs 13, verse 22 says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Now, how can anyone do that if they're content to live paycheck to paycheck? And I say, some people have to live that way. I've lived that way in my life. Sometimes circumstances force us to live that way. But we shouldn't just be content that this is all that we want. We should want to excel. We should want to be able to leave something for our children, our children's children. There's nothing wrong with that way of thinking. Nothing wrong with that at all. Sometimes in our society, for so many people in the world, it's about me. You know, my grandchildren, they can get along themselves. I had to do it myself. They can get along themselves. I'm not talking about leaving some great inheritance. But the idea is if we are saving, then oftentimes we do have something of value that we can pass along. Now, sometimes we don't. And we can't. And it's not a matter of our character sometimes. Sometimes medical bills pile up, and all we can do is pay those and do the best we can. I'm not saying that the only good people leave an inheritance. I'm saying this is a way of thinking. Are we just content to provide for ourselves and not leave anything for anybody else? Are we just content with that? Or do we have the opportunity to do better and excel and to leave something for those who behind? It says, the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. Of course, that's speaking to the idea that ultimately the sinners, they can sin and they can cheat people, but ultimately that will go to the righteous because Christ will return and things will be made right. But I think it's important to have the mentality of trying to be able to provide and leave something for others. Again, we may not be able to. It may not be practical. But it's an ideal that we should not put out of our mind. Point number four, I'm calling this personal development, personal development. We are to be good stewards with that which God has entrusted us with. And part of being a good steward is developing our ability to be better stewards, personal development. If you go back to Matthew chapter 25, very familiar passage to us having to do with the parable of the talents. There's a lot of meaning here for us. Now, sometimes we read the parable of the talents, we might just naturally think the English word talent means capabilities, talents that we might have, gifts that God may have given us. And I think it applies, it certainly applies, to use what God has given us in our capabilities to serve others, to serve God. But technically, talent was a unit of money. It was a fairly good amount of money. And it specifically, though it can apply to other things, it's specifically applying it here to money. And how we deal with that which we've been entrusted with. We'll just break right into the parable, Matthew 25, verse 19. And after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received five talents came and brought five other talents, saying, Lord, you have delivered me five talents. Look, I have gained five more besides them. And his Lord said, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord. Now, the implication there is a judgment, our judgment. And the idea of how we have used what God has given us, and both our talents, our gifts, but also the material resources that he has given us. Have we been able to grow those things? Verse 22, another person had received two talents, and we know the story. He came back and he had gained two more. Now, there's an important principle here, too. God does not believe everyone should have equal amount of stuff. One gets five, one gets two. The story isn't, hey, why'd he get five and I just get two? That's the way society today wants to make everything. Why do they have and I don't? That's not the story of the Bible. The story here is, what do we do with what we have? And when we practice, biblical principles with what we do, that can grow. And for all those people out complaining in the world, wanting someone to hand them a handout, they need to practice the principles. Practice the principles, and they will grow their material wealth and grow their character at the same time. But sometimes, certain ones are blessed materially more than others. And we shouldn't be comparing ourselves among ourselves. We should just focus on what has God given us. How can I improve that? How can I increase that? How can I show myself to be a good steward? It's not about what God gave someone else. It's about how I'm using what God has given me. And of course, we get here to the third servant who complains to God. He was given only one talent. And he says in verse 24, then he who had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. See, it's all about, this is not fair. God hasn't given me enough. He's probably comparing himself with the others, and I'm not even motivated to do anything because this is just not fair. It's the way a lot of people are in the world. Now, I've been dealt a shorthand. I just don't care. I'm not going to worry about it. And he says, I was afraid and hid your talent in the ground. Can you imagine if someone gave you something, some money, and said, take care of it? To me, it's a lot harder to go dig a hole and to bury it than it is to take it to the bank. Just take it to the bank. And don't worry about digging a hole. But he put it in the ground. He said, look, I have what is yours. He says, but his Lord answered and said, notice the wording, you wicked and lazy. It wasn't just lazy, it was wicked. It was wicked because he had not fulfilled his responsibility and grown what he had been given. This was his responsibility. It says, and I think wickedness is also in his attitude, the way he's presenting this, blaming, in this case, ultimately blaming God for what he didn't have. It says, so you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, in verse 27. At my coming, I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has four talents. No, 10 talents. So the one who was originally given five, one was originally given two, give it to the one who has five. Now that kind of goes against our sense of fairness too, doesn't it? Oh, because of the egalitarian way that we've been trained to think, everyone should kind of have equal. Let's give it to the person who doesn't have as much. But God is thinking in terms of, let's give it to the person who did the best with what they were given. Who did the best. And that doesn't necessarily have to be the one that had five. But obviously there was something in this where that person who had the five was doing things better, handling it better, stewarding better. So the one who is the better steward will get the one. So we are to be good stewards with what we have. It says, for everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Now that's, again, has to do with our character, how we use what we have, not just because we don't have much. If we don't have much and we use it well, God will reward us. It's all about how well we're stewarding, caring for, growing, and utilizing what God has given us. So that's point number four, personal development. Let me also just mention, especially for our young people and younger people, the importance of continuing to educate yourself, to make yourself more valuable to the community and society in which we live. That is part of the way we become a better steward. Maybe the person who was given one talent just had bad attitude. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't understand banking. I don't know. We're not told. But it's very hard to be a good steward if we don't know how to grow the money, how to make it more valuable. And educating ourselves is very important. And we live in a society where that really pays off. There was a time where I wanted to change careers, and the IT industry was really heating up at the time, and I couldn't afford to go taking classes, so my classroom was Barnes & Noble and a cup of coffee. And I think I drank so much coffee, I can't drink coffee anymore, because I can't drink coffee anymore. But I would sit down with the books. I couldn't buy them, so I had to just read them at the store. And read and read and read, and over the course of about a year or whatever, I had passed enough certifications to actually get myself in through human resources. And then once I met with my potential boss, I was able to be hired at a very, very advanced position in IT, even though I never had the job, that kind of job before, didn't have a single class to my name. My boss told me, he said, if you can learn that much information that fast, you can learn what we need you to learn. So you don't know it yet. I'm not hiring you because you know what you're doing. I'm hiring you because you can learn it. And that is a very important quality today. Back then, I didn't have YouTube to teach me everything. I mean, I can fix my washer by watching a video on YouTube of my washer being fixed. And it's got like 40 videos of that. I mean, it's amazing the information. I can go sit down and learn how to do something in an Excel spreadsheet in just a few minutes by watching YouTube. Information is there, but for so many people, they're not pursuing that. The more we learn, the more valuable we become to future employers, or we become to ourselves as a self-employed person. It's all about what we know and what we're capable of doing, and so much is there. And it's so frustrating sometimes, you see, not our young people, but young people in the world, especially young guys, it's all about games. I'm talking all the time. They don't go to work. They play games. It's fine to play games once you've done your work, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's all about wasting time, having fun, and they could be utilizing that time to learn. They wouldn't even have to pay a dime. They could learn so much. They have to pay for their internet service, I guess. But so much could be learned, and we can make ourselves so much more productive, so much more capable. We live in an amazing time. We really do in terms of self-development. It is there. But let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 8. We must always remember this. No matter how much we learn, no matter how we continue our education and become more valuable, we have to keep in mind Deuteronomy 8, verse 18. And involve God in that development process. It says, and you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth. It is he. Always remember to involve God in our self-development. To involve him in seeking what is his will. Ask him to help us develop. And always recognizing that the glory goes to God. It's not our own glory that we were able to educate and maybe pursue a different career, pursue having a more valuable position. God gets the glory. It all belongs to God, and it's God who gives us the power to get wealth. So let's always remember that as we seek to develop ourselves, our personal development. So there We as Christians understand the need for spiritual development, but there's also, let's not leave the idea of personal development in terms of what we're capable of doing in our careers, our jobs, materially. Let's understand we can develop in those areas too. The fifth point I'm listing is productivity. And I originally had work ethic, but I changed it to productivity for a reason. I felt that there was a little more that could be included here. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 23. Proverbs 14 and verse 23 simply says, "In all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty." You know, we all understand that laziness leads to poverty. It's just a rule of life. And with work, with labor, there is a profit. In Proverbs 28:19, it says, "He who tills the land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows frivolity will have poverty enough." I like the way that's put, "will have poverty enough." But we understand that. A work ethic is so important. The ability to work hard. I think all of us as parents, it's an important thing, and grandparents, to teach the work ethic. There's so many people today who, and even after the sermon in St. Cloud, I heard some more examples. We all have examples of people we've seen or known that just don't have any work ethic. And it's terrible. It's terrible. We have a society right now that needs people willing to work, and they're not willing to work. I just heard about, I don't know all the facts, but someone was telling me about a company that was recently raided. A lot of illegal non-citizens, whatever you call it. I don't know what the term is, not to offend anybody, but they're not legally in the country. Legally in the country. And so they were raided. And this substantial number of the workforce on this farm no longer has workers. And they can't go to the community. There's plenty of young men and boys that could work farms. They don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. They'd rather do nothing. And this is because we lack a work ethic, and we're not teaching that value. Well, I hope all of us understand the importance of work ethic. But I called this productivity because there's another aspect of it. Typically, when you're willing to work hard, you're able to produce. But I saw a program a few weeks ago. I forget, it was an old Western, I think, but it was kind of a bit funny. One of the guys on the farm, he worked from dawn till the end of the day, dawn till sunset. And he worked hard, but he never did anything that was really important. And he was kind of made fun of. It was kind of a joke that he worked so hard, but he never did anything that really counted. You know, I think that's something we have to consider. If we're going to be productive members of the community, we need to be able to do something that counts, that's needed, something that there is a value in doing. It's not just working. It's not just staying busy. And we oftentimes face this, probably many of us, myself included, have looked back on certain decisions I've made and thought, well, that wasn't the best decision. It's kind of a waste of time to take that or to study into this or that. Sometimes we will get degrees or whatnot that don't contribute really enough to the community that it's worth anyone paying for. Or maybe there's just so few positions that you have to excel, and maybe you can. It'd be great to excel in some unique position where not many people can do that. But we have to be careful. We have to choose to do things that can be productive. Now, that's not to say only study what will make you money. No, there is an occasion to study that which makes us better as a person artistically or whatever. There are times to study what we love. But we have to have a fallback, something that we can be productive in the community. I mentioned in St. Cloud that, for example, to become the world-renowned expert, well, let me take that back. If you're the world-renowned expert in anything, you'd probably be okay. But let's say you become somewhat knowledgeable of ant farming. And you really love it. The world today says, follow your passion. You will succeed. I love ant farming. And I know how to do it. And then I realized that I probably shouldn't say that because there's probably a future in ant farming. Because the next big thing is eating insects, right? It's the next big thing. Get rid of the cows. They're polluting the atmosphere. It's the global warming and all. And so they're pushing insects now. So you can eat grasshoppers and crickets. That's about it. And at lunch, we discussed whether you degut them or not first, or whether you eat the legs or not. This was our discussion at lunch. But I guess insects are coming. So maybe ant farming is the right thing. But the point is think about it. How can you be productive? And not just put forth effort, but be productive to the community and the society. That's an important aspect. Let's go to point number 6. Here we're talking about being productive. We're talking about self-improvement. We're talking about having a savings, about stewardship. Boy, this sermon almost sounds like it's all about coveting, about getting more stuff. Well, is that the case? Some people look at pursuing excellence, trying to better themselves in order to make themselves more valuable. They kind of see that as a covetous frame of mind. And they don't want to be covetous. I don't want to, you know, pursue these things. If I were to try to get a job that makes twice as much as I make now, that's just coveting. God doesn't want me to just want money. Well, is that true? Is that true? Does that naturally follow because we want to better ourselves, be more productive, maybe get a promotion at work? Does that necessitate us being covetous? I say no. Now, we could be. Our motives could be covetous, and that would be wrong. We're told in Exodus 20, verse 17, you shall not covet, one of the commandments. Your neighbor's house, your neighbor's wife, the male servant, the female servant, the ox, the donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. The concept there is, oh, I see Mr. Pedersen has a nice briefcase. I want that briefcase. I want that briefcase. It leads one to envy. It leads one to steal. But that's very different than wanting to improve ourselves. It's very different than wanting to excel. And we don't have to want to excel just because we want more stuff. There is the potential of being motivated by covetousness. But we also have the concept of contentment. And that's my point 6, is contentment versus coveting. Should not we be content where we are? Wherever we are. The Bible says, Hebrews 13, verse 5, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. Well, I've known people back in my day, early days, that they would say they were content. I would say they were lazy. Sometimes it's hard to tell which is which. Is a person lazy or are they simply content? We can have a lot of money. We can have a lot of nice things and be content. We can not work, not do much at all, and just simply be lazy. We can have a lot of stuff and be covetous. But just because a person has a lot of stuff doesn't mean they're covetous at all. I think we've all known people who have plenty and are very generous, who give. Just because we desire to improve ourselves and be productive, that doesn't mean we're driven by covetousness. Now, we have to analyze that, but it doesn't have to be that way. We could be driven by the desire to please God, to better ourselves, to become a better person, to become a better steward, to become a better asset for God to use in the millennium. There are many good reasons to better ourselves. We don't just have to think that bettering ourselves means we are coveting. Now, another point that I will make here is that as God's people, especially as we practice these principles and look at our motivation and analyze that, as God's people, we can and we should be able to thrive under good economic conditions. Considering our health, considering our well-being, sometimes we have health issues that prevent us from doing some of these things. No matter what we do, we just can't. Sometimes we get to be so old, nobody wants to hire us. And that's life. Look, we get older. We accept that. But for a younger person, particularly a younger person with good health, there's no reason in a good environment, good economic environment, that we can't excel when we practice these spiritual principles, because they are spiritual. We're talking about them at maybe a material level, but they are spiritual principles. There's no reason we can't excel. Now, as God's people as well, as many of God's people have experienced, they have been persecuted, and they have been poor. And they have not been able to find work because, let's say, of the Sabbath, because of who they are, who they worship. We have Christians in various parts of the world who can't find good work because they're not a Muslim. We do sometimes find people, and perhaps us in the future, will live under persecuted conditions. And it's simply under those conditions that one does not expect to excel. We expect that God will provide our needs, and God will bless us as we need to be blessed. But I think it's important and wise to take advantage of good economic conditions and excel, do our best. Not be driven by money, but be driven by the desire to do better and to be productive. And that leads us to point number 7. Well, before we go to point number 7, let me just at least mention 1 Corinthians 6, verse 10. Because ultimately, when times are bad and we don't have the opportunity, no matter what we do, to do anything except rely on God to provide for us, there is 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 10 that is encouraging in the sense that it says, as sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. There are times that there are sorrowful conditions, but yet there's always something that we can rejoice about. As poor, yet making many rich. We may be financially poor at times, but there are ways we can make others rich. Not monetarily, but by other means. It says, as having nothing, yet possessing all things. There may be times in our future where we don't have anything, but we do possess all things because we know God's kingdom is coming and our inheritance is the earth. And we can be happy and rejoice in that. There are times we have to look at our future because the present is not very good. But there are also times where we have opportunities. And then certainly, at least for now, there are many opportunities out there if we practice these principles. Then again, that leads us to point number 7. Point number 7, personal and family finances, the importance of generosity. I mentioned earlier, sometimes I forget what I mentioned between St. Cloud and here, but I believe I mentioned the idea that things or just buying more stuff is not all we have to do, all we can do with our money. Just because we have a desire to improve ourselves and maybe make more money, it doesn't mean we just want more stuff. There are many other things we can do with our money. One is being generous to others. And there have been many people over the years, and certainly here within this congregation, that have been extremely generous. I know people that didn't have enough to really do well themselves, but were still very generous to others. And that's saying something when you're putting others to the point that you're willing to give others, be generous to others, when you really don't have enough yourself. But others have been blessed and are very generous. And generosity is a very important aspect of our spiritual life. In Luke chapter 6 and verse 38, it says, give and it will be given to you. Good portion, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. I love that verse because I always imagine when I'm making biscuits, and I try to get a good biscuit recipe. If you've got a good one, let me know. But, you sift that flour, you get the air mixed in, you take the cup and go down in there, and you've got a cup of flour, but it's sifted. Boy, you can take and stuff that down, you get a whole lot more flour in there. And then you can even overflow it from the top, and there's a lot of flour. In essence, I picture this as saying, if we give a cup of sifted flour, we're going to get back a cup of just pressed down, pushed together. In other words, there's a real blessing in giving. Now, if we give just to get, we've got a wrong motive. But if we give genuinely out of concern for others, then God says we can expect blessings from that. We can. I also think the other day I realized that we went to some restaurant and they said they had the calorie content for the burger and the fries. It looks somewhat acceptable. Then they bring the fries and they're literally overflowing the plate. And I'm thinking, that's not a serving of fries. That's 5 servings of fries. And young people, that's great when you're young. When you get older, you wish they had not brought that to you. The overflowing stuff kind of loses its glamour. But we are to be generous, and there is this promise of blessing. But let's also notice 1 Corinthians 13 as we conclude here. Even in being generous, we always have to be aware of our motives. God is looking at the heart. God may look at the heart of a poor person and see laziness. God may look at the heart of a rich person and see diligence. And vice versa. You can't tell on the outward appearance. But we have to examine ourselves. What is our motive? And First Corinthians 13, verse 3, it's part of the love chapters here, the importance of showing love, genuine, outflowing concern and love for others. It says, "And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, if I have not love, it profits me nothing." Now, this verse has always intrigued me, because isn't that the very definition of love? To give out of lack of concern for self? Give all I've got to help others, to even give my very life, my very body, to benefit others. Isn't that the very definition of love? Well, not if it's being done out of a self-seeking way. Sometimes people can be very generous because they want attention to themselves. And this verse speaks to our motive. We can do things that makes it seem like we are a loving person, but we have to analyze ourselves. Are we really doing it out of love? And that is a heart issue. Sometimes it's easy for us to put on a show of being this kind or that kind of person, but we have to look at our heart. And when it comes right down to personal family finance, it is a heart issue, a heart issue. Where is our heart? So let me simply conclude by going back and rehearsing. Obviously, we need to be obeying God, utilizing our money in a way that's pleasing with God, and paying our tithes, being obedient to God so that we can receive His blessings, and realizing that everything belongs to God. We are simply stewards. What ways can we develop ourselves to be better stewards in personal development? What ways can we offer something to the community and to society that is productive, that is helpful and valuable? And how do we analyze our heart? Are we content? Whether we have little or much, are we content in the way that we don't want to improve ourselves or grow? Or are we content knowing that we don't need a lot of stuff to be happy? I think we can improve ourselves without being covetous, and we can be content while still improving ourselves as well. And finally, are we generous? And do we exercise that generosity from the right spirit, the right frame of mind? When things turn bad, and they will, and they do, we know that we can turn to God for our needs. But God's people can be blessed and thrive in good economic conditions. And brethren, we have the opportunity to serve God, to serve one another, to improve ourselves, to be productive, and to be generous. And these are all, you think about it, these are all spiritual character issues. When it comes down to personal and family finance, it's a character thing. And that's why God can look at us and look at our heart and make a judgment on how well we're doing. Hopefully, as we approach the Feast of Tabernacles, we can consider how we're doing, because we're going to have a lot of people to teach. And these are some principles that many people haven't practiced. In some cases, they will be new. The freedom to practice them will be new. And we will have the opportunity to teach what we have practiced in our age.